CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, Romeo Dallaire opens Vancouver's eyes to the increasing use of child soldiers in armed conflict, and Vancouver's Mayor Sam Sullivan takes transit down Broadway corridor as a top priority. And just to mix things up on this Monday afternoon, we'll hear commentary from Phil Caudry on how Vancouver can reduce violent crime in the lead-up to the Winter Olympics. We'll have all this, plus sports and your five-day weather forecast, coming up this half hour right here on News 101. With the help of two UBC professors, Harbor Air, the world's largest seaplane airline, has become the first airline in North America to become entirely carbon neutral. This precedent was established through the work of the Offsetters Carbon Neutral Society, an organization founded by Hadi Dolatabadi, and a Canada Research Chair in UBC's Institute for Resources, Environment, and Sustainability, and James Tansey of UBC's Center for Applied Ethics and the Sutter School of Business. Offsetters has been helping individuals and organizations to reduce their carbon footprint since its inception in 2005. Their goal is achieved through the use of carbon offsets, or financial donations made in the name of an institution or individual that go towards renewable energy and energy-efficient projects throughout the world. Starting on October 1st of this year, Harbor Air introduced a fuel surcharge on all flight services to counteract the greenhouse gas emissions they produce. Tansey says that all Offsetters projects, such as the Harbor Air Initiative, are monitored by a third party, so their users know the contributions result in tangible climate benefits. For more information on that and other projects, you can go to www.offsetters.ca. Now, with a look at other local news, here are Carrie Baptist, Tracy Fuller, and Rita Farkas.
Vancouver Mayor Sam Sullivan claims that an expansion of the Millennium Line SkyTrain along the Broadway corridor to UBC isn't just important for the city, it's of regional and provincial importance. The Broadway corridor is the second largest downtown area in the province. Sullivan says that good, solid transit is one of those things, like a hospital, that are regional in nature. The City of Vancouver has just finished a round of public roundtable discussions on the proposed expansion and has launched an online survey at www.mayorsamsullivan.ca. Sullivan has launched the online survey in an attempt to avoid repeating mistakes from the Canada Line expansion. This time, he says, the concerns of local businesses and residents will be front and center.
Retired Lieutenant General Romeo Dallaire spoke to a sold-out crowd about the prevalence and danger of child soldiers last night at the Chan Center. Child soldiers, he said, are the new mobilized weapon of choice employed by tens of nations engaged in conflicts around the world. Some countries recruit these young killing machines while others force them into combat. Dallaire spoke specifically about children from Sierra Leone who watched their parents murdered and then taken to boot camps, drugged and forced to become soldiers. 40% of these children are girls, Dallaire said, who are not only capable of killing indiscriminately, but who cook, clean, and serve as unwilling wives to the older soldiers. These situations must be stopped, Dallaire said, but he could not say how Canadian soldiers might immediately respond to conflict situations. What do you do, Dallaire asked the audience? Do you kill children who kill? Can we hold an 8-year-old accountable for killing when he has no other option? Dallaire is taking his message across university campuses for the rest of this month. His engagements will end at the beginning of 2008.
November is here, which means Vancouver pedestrians need to pay extra attention when crossing the streets. According to the Vancouver Police Department, November is one of the most dangerous months for pedestrians. Last year, 40 people were killed and 1,800 people were injured in the Lower Mainland area alone. The Vancouver police suggest wearing bright colors, making eye contact with drivers before crossing intersections, walking behind the barriers, and staying within the lines painted on the street to ensure pedestrian safety. Cell phones, iPods, and other electronic gadgets are distracting to both walkers and drivers, so police caution against using them on roads after dark. Police will be strictly penalizing jaywalkers this month in an effort to make Vancouver roads safer.
Local celebrity chef Rob Feeney is speaking about his resignation from the popular Vancouver restaurants Lumiere and Feeney's. When asked about the reasoning behind his leaving the restaurants, Feeney blamed his business partners, David and Manji Sidhu, because he says they have forced him out of their partnership. Feeney has been the executive chef, of two hot spots since their inception. Lumiere has been rated as one of Vancouver's top fine dining establishments, and Feeney's, situated across the street, is also a popular but more casual place to dine in Kitsilano. Feeney has said it has been a big decision for him to leave the two restaurants, but says the decision was not made by him, but by his business partners. He hasn't got any plans to open a new restaurant in the near future, but he says that he can't imagine working anywhere other than Vancouver, which he calls home. Feeney is best known for winning the title of Iron Chef on the popular TV show in 2005.
Vancouver law enforcement officials have joined their colleagues across Canada, taking the fight against organized crime to the internet. In this digital age, turf wars have gone virtual, and police in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto are pledging to keep up. Gangs have become adept at using the web to propagate their lifestyle and recruit young people. However, law enforcement is learning to fight back using the web. Toronto police now regularly monitor popular websites such as YouTube and MySpace. Considering the social networking sites as important sources for clues, police will also use the web as a method to promote their crime prevention message broadcasting their public service announcements on YouTube. And on a lighter note, today marks the opening of Grouse Mountain's outdoor skating pond. Due to the colder than normal temperatures on the mountain, the skating pond has opened early, and the ski and snowboard season is only 2 to 3 weeks away, according to mountain officials. The skating pond will be open from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily, so strap on your skates and go up the mountain. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Menstruation, the final frontier. This is the research of SEMCOR, its continuing mission to explore strange yet familiar body parts, to seek out new information unfamiliar to the medical profession, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Tired of frantically raising your shields with those unexpected periods? Fed up of not really understanding what's going on in the nether regions of your space? Come to the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research and learn how to live long and prosper through all phases of your cycle. SEMCOR can give you the tools to chart your way through your cycle so it seems like a safe space rather than the outer reaches of the galaxy. Our prime directive is to educate women about their bodies so they can have peace and a long life. To that end, we're recruiting volunteers for a menstrual cycle and ovulation study involving a personal log and urine samples, all completed in the privacy of your own quarters. Participants must be between the ages of 20 and 40, have menstruated in the last 3 months, and not be taking any hormonal medications such as birth control pills. Resistance is futile. Set your coordinates to www.semcor.ubc.ca or call 604-875-5960. We're the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research.
What is that? I know what that is. That's music.
For $15, the Friends of CITR card scores you in-store discounts at Beat Street, Red Cat, Vinyl, Scratch, and Audio Pile. Support Vancouver's finest indie radio station and pick up your card today.
What do you want to do with your life?
I want to rock.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 6:16. 5:15. Finance Minister Carol Taylor is concerned what impact the rising Canadian dollar may have on BC's booming economy. With more on that and other local news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Rita Farkas, Carrie Baptist, and Tracy Fuller.
The provincial finance minister is confident that BC's economy will remain strong in the face of a rising Canadian dollar. Carol Taylor says that increased trade with Asia, as well as strong local research and film industries, will allow BC to weather a downturn in the U.S. economy. Taylor admits that for every cent the loonie gains on the American dollar, the province will lose $25 to $40 million. The minister notes that this will have a significant impact on the province. Taylor is particularly concerned about the province's forestry sector, which is currently facing a perfect storm in the shape of a high dollar, rocket bottom lumber prices, and a deteriorating U.S. housing market, the impact of which is already being felt in the province's logging industry, which has experienced layoffs and closures.
NDP leader Jack Layton says his party will introduce a motion into Parliament calling for a referendum on whether or not the Senate should be abolished. Layton says the Senate is outdated and undemocratic, but that Canadians should have their say in the future of the parliamentary institution. The Conservative government already announced their intentions to deal with the Senate in the October 16th throne speech. Ideas for Senate reform include limits on the term of senators and including provincial voters in the senator selection process. Layton says that holding the referendum would not be costly to taxpayers if it was held in conjunction with the next federal election. However, even if Canadians did want to abolish the Senate, a constitutional change as large as that would require almost unanimous consent of all 10 provinces. Even still, Layton says it is worthwhile to find out how Canadians feel about such a decision.
Striking faculty at Acadia University have signed a deal to end their three-week-old walkout. The deal was reached this morning following 60 hours of heated negotiations with the help of a mediator. Nova Scotia's Labour Minister Mark Parent appointed the mediator last Thursday to try and hasten an end to the strike, which has dragged on since October 15th. The mediation is credited with breaking through the impasse between the parties over wages. Now the only question that remains is when students will return to lecture halls to salvage what is left of their semester. Acadia's Senate is expected to meet later to decide how the rest of the school term will be handled.
Just to change things up a little bit, it's time for political commentary with Phil Caudry. This week, Phil addresses the rise in violent crime that has hit the Lower Mainland and proposes a three-plank platform to reduce these incidences before the 2010 Olympics.
If one thing is certain over the last year in the Lower Mainland, it is the spike in violent deaths that residents have witnessed. Mostly gang-related, the streets once perceived as safe have given rise to reports of gun violence on what seems like an almost weekly basis. The crimes have appeared in a variety of areas, from quiet residential streets to downtown club spots. Most recently, six residents in Surrey were found dead in an apartment complex fire. Foul play was suspected. The reasoning behind the increase in violent attacks over the last year is still uncertain. However, the perception that the media is simply over-reporting these incidences is completely false. It has been confirmed by Vancouver Police Chief Jim Chu that there is a spike in the murder rate. Although the police chief admitted that there was a rise in violent crime, he did not have an answer regarding whether this is simply a spike or an emerging trend. Either way, the city that is going to be hosting the Winter Olympics in just over 2 years has a potential image problem on its hands. If Vancouver is not perceived as a city that tourists can set foot in without being seriously concerned for their livelihood, this will impact Olympic attendance. But, most importantly, people's lives are at stake, including innocent bystanders that find themselves at the wrong place at the wrong time. When these variables are weighed in, it's evident that keeping our streets safe from crime should be a top priority. And, since current measures have been unable to quell the violent murders or reduce the number of firearms on the street, new tactics are in order. No matter what sort of gun laws you put into place, a black market will persist and cater to some of the most dangerous members of society. Being a port city, and with the large narcotics industry that comes with it, the Lower Mainland is susceptible to more unregistered guns. The federal gun registry was unable to remove these guns off the street, and similar measures will most likely yield similar results. However, all hope is not lost. Beyond the status quo, there are a number of measures that can be taken to reduce the violence. The first is the legalization of marijuana. In a regulated market setting, production and distribution of marijuana would no longer be in the hands of criminals, but in law-abiding companies. While this would not eliminate organized crime, it would serve a significant blow to criminal profiteering, and in turn would reduce the number of gang wars related to the drug sales. Secondly, an extensive study needs to be conducted to determine how recruitment is conducted in organized crime over the last 5 years, and to find ways to prevent at-risk people from entering into a criminal life. Third, and arguably most importantly, stricter penalties must be instituted. If someone is selling guns and is convicted, give them life in jail. If someone murders with a gun, give them life in jail with no parole. No house arrest, no visitation rights. If crime is to be prevented, the penalties have to be as strong as oak. With drug reform and addressing social factors as supporting pillars, the punishments will fit the crime. Now, if we could only get our far left-leaning courts on board and a government in power willing to take action, we would be able to take the very first steps in order to quell the violence that we have seen. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Cottery.
And thanks for that, Phil. Now with a look back at the past weekend in UBC athletics, here's Wilson Wong with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
The UBC women's soccer team is headed to the national championships on a high note, winning the Canada West final 3-0 over the Victoria Vikes. The win gives the Thunderbirds their first Canada West title since 2003, and they will now head to Sydney, Nova Scotia, where the Nationals begin at Cape Breton University on Thursday. Yesterday's final at UBC's Wilson Field had the Birds on the scoreboard early, as Sarah Trelawyer found the back of the net just 8 minutes in. Forward Janine Kerr added a goal late in the second half off a long ball from goalkeeper Jackie Dunnett as the Birds entered the half up 2-0. Caitlin Davey put the Thunderbirds up by 3 in the second half as UBC cruised to the victory. Dunnett got the shutout in net, stopping all 3 of Victoria's shots. Head coach Dick Mosher says the key was coming out fast against the strong Vikes team, and Trelawyer's early goal was crucial to get momentum on their side. The Thunderbirds will now look to secure their 4th national title in 6 years, starting Thursday with a quarterfinal matchup against Montreal. The tournament's gold medal game goes Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. The men's soccer team is also headed for the Nationals. They are being held here at UBC starting Thursday. The Thunderbirds took on Trinity Western in Langley Saturday night for the CanWest final, but fell 2-1 in overtime to the host Spartans. Trinity's Adrian Kekic opened the scoring with a blast-off of Nathan Pogue pass in the 22nd minute. But UBC was quick to respond as Canada West Rookie of the Year Jorge Angel Mira got the equalizer in the 37th. The second half saw both teams trade several chances, but solid goalkeeping at both ends of the field kept the game at a stalemate. But early in the first overtime, Pogue netted the winner for the Spartans, sending the ball clear past UBC keeper Serge Jakanovic, giving Trinity their third straight Canada West title. The national championships begin this Thursday at UBC, with the Thunderbirds playing the Montreal Carabins at 7 p.m. at Thunderbird Stadium. The game will be webcast on our site, www.citr.ca. We will also webcast the semifinals, the bronze medal game, and the final, which goes at 3 p.m. Sunday. The women's field hockey team had a disappointing finish at the national championships in Toronto on the weekend. They missed their first podium in 7 years. After going 2-2 through the round-robin portion of the tournament, the Thunderbirds were relegated to playing their cross-water rival Victoria for the bronze. The Vikes posted a 3-1 win over the CanWest champions, with third-year forward Natalie Wise getting the game winner for the Vikes. UBC's lone goal came from Elise Milosevic, who redirected a Jesse Dennis corner. The host Toronto Varsity Blues took away their 10th McRae Cup, defeating Guelph 1-0 in overtime. The 3 UBC players, Laura Dowling, Tyler Flexman, and Catherine McPherson, were selected to the all-tournament team. The UBC men's basketball team recorded a frustrating road split in southern Alberta over the weekend. On Friday night, UBC won their third straight match, beating Lethbridge 90-79. The first half was close, with the lead changing hands 11 times before UBC took the lead into the break at 47-43. The Birds got some separation in the third quarter, holding the Pronghorns to just 15 points. UBC was also stronger on the boards, out-rebounding Lethbridge 38-21. Christick led UBC with 23 points, while Matt Ratcher added 16. The Birds took their 3-0 record into Calgary for the most anticipated game of this young season. The Dinos are an athletic and young team led by NCAA transfer Henry Beckering. But the hype leading up to the game proved unfounded in the first half. UBC went up 14 as their defense held Calgary to just 22 points and 21% shooting. The Thunderbirds moved the ball well on offense as a variety of UBC players found the basket. Their double-digit lead extended into the last quarter as they led by as much as 13 early in the fourth, but they were already in the midst of a Calgary comeback. The Dinos used a 22-9 run over the third and fourth quarters to tie the game. Rookie Tyler Fiddler hit a jump shot with 5 minutes to go to make it 61-all. He hit the ensuing foul shot to put Calgary in the lead for good. The final score, 73-68 for the home team. Ross Beckering dominated on the boards in the second half. He ended the night with 20 points and 14 rebounds. Blaine LaBranche scored 20 for the Thunderbirds. And after the game, several UBC players said they got stagnant on offense in the final 10 minutes. Brett Leversedge says the team leaves Alberta feeling frustrated.
I don't know, especially once the game started against Calgary. Definitely a game we should have won. We really felt that. So not very happy with the outcome. And coaches kind of blamed it on a bad week of practice, and I think they're right. We didn't really come to work last week, and it showed in the games.
UBC will now face Fraser Valley in what will be an early season battle for first place in the Canada West Pacific Division. The players on the women's basketball team say they're back on track after sweeping Lethbridge in Calgary over the weekend. On the opening weekend of the season, UBC was crushed 73-41 by rival Simon Fraser. The players then worked hard all this week, including at a 6:30 a.m. practice Thursday to get ready for the road trip. On Friday night, UBC got the defensive performances they were looking for, holding Lethbridge to 30% shooting in an 88-52 win. Offensively, UBC shot 60% from the field. Devin Lisson and Leanne Evans led the way with 16 points each. Saturday saw UBC roll into Calgary to face the 9th-ranked Dinos and leave with a 72-66 win. Thunderbirds led 26-21 after a quarter. Calgary loves to run the floor, and it looked like this would be a high-scoring game, but UBC's defense was stellar, controlling the pace of the game and forcing the Dino players to throw up low-percentage shots. They held Calgary to just 13 points in both the second and third quarters to take control. Lisson was the leading scorer again with 16 points. Here she is on the win over the Dinos.
Yeah, I think we really stepped it up because they're a pretty quick team, but I thought we controlled them well, and they have some really good shooters, and we held one of their best shooters to, I think, 5 points or something, and she only scored them in the last 2 minutes. So I think we did a really good job.
UBC hosts Fraser Valley this weekend at home. The men's hockey team suffered 2 consecutive losses for the first time this year as visiting Manitoba swept the Thunderbirds in their weekend series. Friday night's game had UBC up 3-1 leading into the third, but Manitoba tied it up with just under 3 minutes to go. Mark Olson then got the game winner just a minute later, redirecting a point shot off the end boards into the net past UBC goalie Jerry Festa. Thunderbirds forward Jeff Lynch was lost indefinitely Friday after suffering a separated shoulder. Saturday's rematch didn't fare any better for UBC as the Birds lost 3-2. UBC's record now sits at 6-4, good for third place in the Canada West Division. The injury-plagued Birds, who are now without forward Mitch Bartley for the rest of the year, have a much-needed bye weekend before heading to Saskatoon to face the Huskies November 16th and 17th. After going 0-6 to start the regular season, UBC's women's hockey team put together a pair of wins over the weekend in Lethbridge. Saturday night, they beat the Pronghorns 3-1 as forward Emily McGrath-Agg scored 2 goals and added an assist. Melinda Choi was a standout in net for the Birds, stopping 26 shots. Yesterday's rematch had UBC pick up right where they left off, scoring 3 goals in the first period, 2 from Micheline Devine. Lethbridge responded with a tally in each of the second and third periods, but the Birds took the 4-2 win as McGrath-Agg had another stellar night, posting 3 assists. Choi also got her 2nd win in as many nights, stopping 29 shots. UBC now returns home to host the Regina Cougars for a 2-game series this weekend at the Winter Sports Center. The men's volleyball team split their weekend series against the visiting Calgary Dinos Friday night. The Birds convincingly won in straight sets, holding a 42-26 edge in kills. Saturday's game, however, saw a reversal of fortune as Calgary downed UBC in 3 straight sets, winning 25-18, 25-19, and 26-24. Steve Gotch led the Birds in Saturday's loss with 11 kills as UBC's offense struggled throughout much of the night. The Thunderbirds now sit in 4th place in the Canada West with a record of 2-2. They'll face Manitoba in Winnipeg this weekend for a 2-game series. In cross-country, UBC's women finished 2nd at the regionals in Washington State over the weekend. Shannon Elmer was the top bird, finishing 6th in the individual standings. The men finished 6th with Eric Bean as the leading UBC runner in 43rd. Now the women's team will find out tomorrow whether they have qualified for the nationals in Wisconsin. Finally, in rugby, the UBC men's first win of the year is also being called the upset of the year in the BC Rugby Union. They scored 21 unanswered points to beat first place Capilano 21-10 on Saturday. On the women's side, UBC lost 17-10 to Burnaby Lake. That's it for Thunderbird Eye this Monday. Tune in tomorrow at 4:30 for more sports chat on Wiener's Barbecue, and then again Friday on News 101 at 5 p.m. I'm Wilson Wong.
Thanks, Wilson. And we wrap up tonight with our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, and your 5-day weather forecast. Selena?
We are looking at another week of warm jackets and umbrellas. The current ridge will be weakening to make room for a low-pressure system to move in. Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll see a mix of sun and cloud with some scattered showers, which will turn to rain Thursday and Friday. Temperatures will remain cool, with highs around 9 all week. That's your weekday weather, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Back to you, Katie.
Thanks, Selena. And that's our program for Monday, November 5th, 2007. Today's newscast is brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Wings coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.
Face the darkest expression of Islam very intimately, and you know, I was afraid. There's a river.